It is time for another episode of East Coast Bias on missioncanning.blogspot.com with your hosts, Brennan Canny and Jason Mish. Now recording live simultaneously from Philadelphia and Daytona Beach, it's East Coast Bias.
Hello and welcome to another episode of East Coast Bias. It is Monday, October 29th, and we are simultaneously broadcasting from Daytona Beach and Pennsylvania. Jason Mish is here with me, and we...
Hello, Brennan. How are you?
Good. How are you, Jason?
Not bad.
Not bad. It's been a while. It's been a while.
It has.
It's been too long. Do you want to get right into some baseball, considering that the Red Sox... The Red Sox swept the Colorado Rockies last night. 4-3 win. John Lester, this time last year, was recovering from cancer. He was getting chemotherapy, and last night he pitched a gem of a game and allowed the Red Sox to win their second championship in the last 4 years. Do you think that the Red Sox are going to become the Yankees of... I don't want to say this era, but do you think they're going to start on a Yankees kind of dynasty where they just start winning and winning and winning?
That's a tough one because that's a yes-no. I'll give you the yes part of it for their chances to be a dynasty is we saw some of the things, the assets that the Red Sox have in the World Series. Young players like Jacoby Ellsbury and Dustin Pedroia came up huge. A guy like Josh Beckett, who was just dominating throughout the postseason, you know, maybe one of the most clutch pitchers in postseason history.
Yeah, arguably. Right now he's right up there with Mariano Rivera.
One of the things that might detract from that is the whole thing with A-Rod, which we'll get into later.
Right.
If they're stupidly considering that, then I don't think so. Mike Lowell's a free agent. Kurt Schilling's a free agent. What he will do in the future is up in the air. So it's a yes-no.
Do you really think that's
a great team?
But it certainly is. And I mean, think of it this way. Matsuzaka, who was a rookie this year, you know, didn't pitch to expectations, I guess one would say, but let's consider that this kid is still young and that he's got a lot more years in baseball and he's got a year under his belt, he's got a playoff series under his belt, and he's got a World Series win already under his belt, and this was his first year. And let's also consider that just Dustin Pedroia came up and played fantastically for them, and Jacoby Ellsbury, who got called up and who played phenomenal in the series. He hit. He ended up hitting .438 in the World Series in those four games. So I mean, they have some young talent. Papelbon, Matsuzaka, who I mentioned. They had, like I said, Ellsbury and Pedroia. So they're set at key positions. And if Mike Lowell leaves, I don't know how big of a deal that'll be. Although he was a catalyst and did win the World Series MVP, but.
Yes.
I don't know. Maybe they get rid of him and then get Alex Rodriguez. I mean, it's sort of an upgrade, wouldn't you say?
No, not.
You wouldn't think so.
No, because he brings too much baggage, I think, with that postseason drought that he goes through all the time. But back to the Red Sox.
Right.
They were the best record in baseball, 96 and 66. And I think they proved it in the World Series. Now, granted, Colorado wasn't. I still think. And people can disagree with me here, but I still think the Rockies weren't the best team in the NL. And they finally, I think the layoff finally got to them. And for the Red Sox, they won all different types of games that they had to win. If game one, they went 13-1. They just completely outslugged them. And Josh Beckett does his thing. Game two, the bullpen's clutch. Papelbon with a big save. They went 2-1. Game three, they slug him out again. Game four, Papelbon gets another save. So they had the pitching to win with pitching, and they had the hitting to win with hitting. And when you can do that, you're gonna be a good baseball team, and you're gonna compete.
Yeah, and let's not forget that they came back from a 3-1 deficit against Cleveland to win the AL pennant. So, I mean, it's not like these guys really skated in; they really had to work for it.
And that was similar to what they did in 2003 championship, because of course, or 2004, excuse me. 2004, of course, they were down 3-0 to the Yankees and came back to win that.
Yeah, and
since we're talking about the Yankees have made news this weekend with the whole, well, yesterday I believe it was, they offered the contract, offered Joe Girardi the position to be the manager.
Yeah, he's expected to take a deal that is reportedly worth $6 million over 3 years.
Do you think that's the best decision for the Yankees?
I think it is. I think it is based on his experience, and I say that because the rest of the guys on the team, Don Mattingly, who I wrote about before, who was expected to be the favorite, you know, he doesn't have any managerial experience, and Tony Peña does have some. He coached the lowly Kansas City Royals to an 83-79 record in which he got the AL Manager of the Year. But let's not forget that Girardi got NL Manager of the Year, and he kept the Marlins into that playoff run, and that was a team that was very, very young, and I think it was just, you know, a series of events that is caused Joe Girardi to be in this situation now, and I just think that he's the best choice based on him catching for the Yankees, being a bench coach for the Yankees, and having that 1 year of managerial experience, and he looked absolutely phenomenal doing it.
I think this was a good decision for him, a former player, and what I think the Yankees are going to do, maybe not, now they're Hank, George Steinbrenner's son is now in charge, kind of. I mean, at least it seems like that. I wonder if they're going to start rebuilding. I mean, they do have a couple good young players who produce late for them, guys like Philip Hughes and Jabba Chamberlain and Ian Kennedy. So maybe if they do start to rebuild, it would be good to have a younger manager in there, more of a player's manager.
Right.
Who doesn't, I think, because Torrey brought so much respect and maybe some intimidation from some of the younger players.
But here's the thing, though, is that the reason Joe Girardi wasn't a manager last year was because he clashed with owner Jeffrey Luria and other, you know, head honchos over in Florida.
But that owner wouldn't spend.
Right, I understand that, but, I mean, to have the Steinbrenner name, I mean, have an ego that big in the front office, how do you think that relationship between Girardi and Steinbrenner is going to work out? And not just George, but now, what's his name, Henry? I believe his name is? Hank, okay. Hank Steinbrenner, who now looks like he's going to be taking over Steinbrenner's job of, you know, calling out the team and trying to wake them up if they have another down year next year.
As long as George Steinbrenner doesn't have outrageous expectations of what Girardi can do next year, then they'll be all right.
Well, what do you think's,
I don't think.
What do you think's a decent expectation for the Yankees if, let's say, you know, Jorge doesn't come back, Rivera doesn't come back, and Rodriguez doesn't come back? Do you think that they are going to be a wild card team or not even make the playoffs at all?
I think there's only two levels of expectation the Yankees have. That's World Series and playoffs.
I understand that, but what's a realistic expectation?
I think playoffs is still a realistic possibility. It was such a weird year for Yankees, but I think it's going to take change. It's going to take turnover. You know, you have to get younger if you're the Yankees.
You mentioned Ian Kennedy and Phil Hughes, and there's also Chingming Wang, who may win the Cy Young this year. They have a good, you know, good young talent in the pitching rotation, but it's their position players where I think they're going to have the most problems. I mean, besides Robinson Cano and maybe Melky Cabrera, I mean, they really have no youth on anywhere in the infield or in the outfield.
Well, we could you talk about position players. We could switch gears a little to A-Rod, who is definitely one of their position players at third base, and he has told the Yankees that he's going to opt out of the contract. Do you think? See, for me, I'm not going to lie, I am a Yankees fan. For me, as much as I wanted A-Rod to come back, even though he was horrible in the postseason, as usual, I think it's probably better for him just because he couldn't handle the pressure that was being a New York Yankee.
So, do you think that... I wouldn't know how to phrase it because it's... Okay, who do you think he'll end up... Where do you think he'll end up next year? And that list is kind of short. considering the amount of money that Scott Boras, his agent, wants. And apparently he's looking anywhere in the ballpark between $30 and $35 million a year.
Some of the teams I've heard mentioned are the Angels, the Cubs, and the Red Sox, but I don't know. I don't see – I mean, the Cubs, they have Aramis Ramirez, like you mentioned. You mentioned that before in the last podcast. And Angels, you know, you have a big star like Vlad. Do you really need another one?
Yeah, I don't know if Vladimir Guerrero is a big star attraction anymore. I think he's just a solid guy. And if they were to bring Rodriguez in, I mean, we talked about the Angels and not having anyone there to back him up. I mean, how great would it be for Vladimir Guerrero to have a cleanup hitter like Alex Rodriguez there behind him, and what kind of numbers he could put up with pitchers actually throwing him pitches to hit?
That's true, but I think you underestimate Vlad a little. But back to the original point, it is a very short list.
Yeah, because there's not a lot of people that are going to be able to be willing to pay him that money. And before we break, do you think that we have seen what kind of numbers he can put up during the regular season? Do you think that $30 and $35 million is too much to ask, considering how poorly he plays in the postseason?
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, that's way too much to ask. Just if he couldn't handle the biggest stage, I mean, that's what he showed completely, that he could not handle the big stage. And I think you have to take that title of the best baseball player. I don't care what he does in the regular season. What's more important, playoff baseball or regular season baseball?
I agree. And but you could also think of it as he puts up those numbers to get his team there. Now, one could say, hey, he hit 54 home runs this year, 150-plus RBIs, and basically helped slug the Yankees into the playoffs. But
you're right.
Then one would also say that, great, he got him there, but he's got to show up there. How can you...
But what did he do in the postseason?
Right.
He was... You know, he had one RBI, homer, one RBI.
Yeah, and it's just like, I mean, what happens? Does he just crumble under the pressure? Does the regular season not mean anything to him, or it's just maybe he just needs to have fun? I don't know, but I think it was a good thing that the Yankees weren't going to overpay him, because they need to go out and get some younger players. I don't know how they're going to do that exactly. They don't have a lot of trade bait, to be honest. So it'll be interesting to see what the Yankees do with all these changes. I mean, Joe Torre gone, Alex Rodriguez gone, and like I said earlier, Mariano Rivera and Jorge Posada both could be gone. And I mean, those guys were both huge, huge catalysts for the Yankees when they went on that run for World Series.
It'll be a very intriguing offseason. And to reiterate, you know, congratulations to the Red Sox for the sweep.
I guess.
And we'll see what the Yankees do in the offseason.
Yeah, it'll be very interesting to see what happens and see how much money people start spending. Because, I mean, I remember last free agency, Barry Zito got that huge contract and stunk it up.
Let's not talk about him.
Yeah, let's not talk about him. All right, well, we're going to take a short break. We are going to come back with your NFL and college football rundowns. And we will see you guys in a few minutes. And we are back with East Coast Biased. I am Brendan Canny, alongside with Jason Mish. And we are going to get into some NFL football action. First on the plate is Detroit beating Chicago, whom the Eagles unfortunately lost to last week. So they beat the Chicago Bears 16-7. John Kitna, 268 yards in the air. And Kevin Jones, who makes, I believe, his second appearance since coming back from an injury, goes over 100 yards rushing. And the Detroit Lions are 5-2, and they are a real threat now in the NFC North.
Really one of the shockers in the NFC, the 5-2 Lions. And they finally get a 100-yard rushing day out of Kevin Jones, and the story for the Bears, 4 turnovers by Brian Griese in the way of 4 interceptions.
Yeah,
and that will kill any team.
I mean, who do you want to put in there, Griese or Grossman? At this point, I don't think it really matters. Moving on, the Pittsburgh Steelers come away with a 24-13 victory over the now slumping Cincinnati Bengals. And there are rumors that Chad Johnson wants out of Cincinnati. Jason, how would you like Chad Johnson in Eagles uniform?
It would be awesome, but it would never happen because there was a guy named T.O. and any high-profile, slightly risque receiver such as a Randy Moss will never don an Eagles uniform because of T.O.
But it would look nice.
It would look very nice.
Yeah, it certainly would. Tennessee wins 13-9 over the lowly Oakland Raiders. After a performance, after Culpepper's brilliant performance in his first game starting as the Oakland Raiders quarterback, he has since then dropped off considerably. Yesterday, he did not play well. Tennessee, however, played well enough again to win. They are now 5-2. Dante Culpepper was 15-32, 167 yards, and one interception. He had four fumbles. Luckily, only one of them was recovered by the Tennessee Titans yesterday.
We mentioned the Lions. They're 5-2. This is another surprise 5-2 team. The Titans, I don't think a lot of people thought they would start this well. And like you said, they do enough to get by. It's not pretty all the time. But Lendale White, excuse me, ran for a career high 133 on the ground. And that willed them to victory, I would say.
It certainly did, and it's
an ugly game.
A very ugly game. Nothing that anyone wanted to watch. But like you said, Tennessee always finds a way to win, and they did this week, 13-9 over Oakland. St. Louis falls to 0-8. They lose to the Cleveland Browns, who again are another success story at this point at 4-3. The Browns put up 27 points thanks to three touchdowns tossed by Derek Anderson. And St. Louis, even though they had Mark Bolger in there, and they had at one point Steve Jackson in there, they just could not get it done. It looks like Jackson is injured. As far as I can tell, it looks like it's just going to be a groin injury. And it doesn't look like it was, you know, I think this was a repeat of an injury that he had before, and I think he just aggravated it. But it'll be interesting to see if he comes back for their next game.
Cleveland, another interesting team, 4-3, above expectations. And Brandon, do you think you still like the Rams to win the NFC West this year?
Not so much. Although, okay, you can bash me on that point, but they have been injury riddled.
Yes, they.
I mean, I agree. I mean, maybe they should have won two or three games by now, but I mean, they've had so many injuries. Although the Buccaneers can say the same thing, and they fared much better, although they didn't fare well in that this week, and I will get into that very soon. Another team that is now 0-8 are the lowly Miami Dolphins, and they lose in the first regular season game played in another country.
Can you explain why they played this game in London?
I don't know. To even call this, the box score reads 0-8, 0-4 at home. I don't know how or why they consider this a home game. I felt really bad for the Dolphins because the Dolphins play well when they're in Dolphin Stadium. And to take away a home game from a team, even though it's the Dolphins, to take away a home field advantage like that, I think is completely ridiculous. And the Giants ended up beating them 13-10. The Giants are now 6-2.
And that's my point exactly. If you're catching the drift of what I've been mentioning so far with the surprise teams, I throw the Giants right in there too. I don't think a lot of people would have them with six wins halfway through the season. And arguably, at least in my opinion, the second best team in the NFC right now.
Behind the Cowboys?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Next game, our Philadelphia Eagles defeated the Minnesota Vikings 23-16. McNabb throws for over 300 yards, although the running game wasn't that fantastic. On either side of the ball, we held Peterson, who was on a rampage through the NFL at this point, held him to 20 carries on only 70 yards. And, you know, the Eagles' defense, again, looked very good, but the offense, you know, just sputters out when it's inside of the red zone.
It was a game we had to have, considering who we're playing next week. We're playing the division-leading Dallas Cowboys, something that's going to really define the season. And either we be 3-5, and I think, and for all intents and purposes, out of the playoff picture. or 4-4 with a huge win over Dallas and right back in the mix.
As both Eagles fans, we can only hope that's the case and they win. And before we move on, Reggie Brown finally had a decent game, over 100 yards receiving. Now the Indianapolis Colts become the second team. They become the second team this season to continue to be undefeated. They beat the Carolina Panthers.
Two undefeated teams. Yes. If that's what you
I was
get.
Trying to spit it out, and I just couldn't think of the right words to complete the sentence. Anyway, Indianapolis 7-0, 4-0 away win in Carolina, 31-7. Manning, Adai, Wayne all led passing, rushing, receiving in their respective categories. An excellent game on Indianapolis's part, and they look like they're gonna be a tough team to beat for the New England Patriots. Although the Patriots, who we will get into, played, I mean, absolutely out of their mind against the Washington Redskins. But let's talk about the Colts and Panthers game.
I'll give you a special prediction here. Patriots win by 10 next week over the Colts. But for any sports fan out there, you know, if you're going to watch ESPN this week, get ready for your brain bashed in with Patriots-Colts talk.
Oh, I know.
And look, I mean, maybe it does deserve to be that much hype because this is the first time ever this late in the season that two undefeated teams are playing each other. And I think, I mean, nobody can say this isn't going to be a great game. But, I mean, come on. It's week nine.
Yeah.
Next week, and, you know.
I know.
Patriots are going to win, but let's see this game in the AFC Championship.
I'm going to have to disagree. I'm going to take the Colts by 4 next week. And before we move on, Manning shook off some early problems to eclipse Johnny Unitas' record of 287 touchdowns. Unitas had 287. He passes the longtime Colt Johnny Unitas for the all-time
congratulations,
all-time passing touchdowns for Indianapolis.
I think that's the first award he's ever won, isn't it?
I think it might be that
record he's ever broken either.
Yeah, Peyton Manning's a pretty good quarterback, I heard. And moving on in a game of terrible quarterbacks, the Buffalo Bills win 13-3 over the now, you know, defunct Jets. The Jonathan Vilma's done for the season, and Kellen Clemens era has officially begun in New York.
You look at the Bills, I mean, they're 3-4. I think that's better than I think people would expect the Bills to be. And, man, the Jets, after a 10-6 season last year, 1-7. And I think it was the right time for Pennington to be benched and Clemens to take over. I think Clemens could be a decent NFL quarterback in the future.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens as far as Clemens and his development goes. I think the Chad Pennington era in New York has ended, and like I said, Kellen Clemens is now going to be the starting quarterback for the Jets for the rest of the season. Now, San Diego actually played their game in Qualcomm Stadium. They returned back to San Diego after the devastating wildfires and won 35-10. And what was a very strong first half for San Diego, they didn't score anything in the second half, but it didn't matter. They beat the Houston Texans 35-10. LaDainian Tomlinson only rushed for 90 yards, but Phillip Rivers threw, I believe it was, 3 touchdowns. Only seven completions on 11 attempts for 130 yards, but 3 touchdowns. And San Diego rolls over Houston. And the San Diego Chargers now 4-3 and are, you know, getting on a roll now.
Fastly improving after a slow start, and now again have put themselves in position to be the best team in the AFC West.
I definitely agree. Now Jacksonville went to Tampa Bay, and Tampa Bay lost 24-23. Jacksonville now is 5-2. They're 3-0 and away, and without having David Gerrard at the starting quarterback position, Jacksonville Jaguars win a close game and are now 5-2 and look to be a dangerous team in the AFC.
They start Quinn Gray. nobody's heard of him.
Their third string, I think, right?
Yeah. Well, they had Leftwich traded him away. And,
right.
Of course, Gerrard went down. But, I mean, I think they beat a team that was a little overrated, better than the record with the Buccaneers. But, you know, good on the ground, and that's all they needed. And Gray didn't lose them the game, and they get the victory, improved to 5-2.
Yeah, Gray did just enough to keep the the Tampa Bay defense honest, and they come out with a victory. Now, we had mentioned and talked about New England and Indianapolis playing next week, but New England, in fact, did have to play a game before they play the defending Super Bowl champs. They what's a good adjective to use? Crush, destroy, manhandle.
Yeah, they all work. Yes, they all
52 work. 52-7 over Washington, who, by the way, has a pretty good defense, and they just absolutely obliterated them. Like I said, 52-7, and New England at this point just looks absolutely unstoppable.
The Redskins may have one of the best secondaries in the NFL. You know, if you think of some of the guys back there, Landry.
Sean Springs. They have a very good secondary.
So, 52 points on that defense, you're right. And like we mentioned with the Colts, Patriots improved to 8-0, and it'll be one of the marquee games of the year, certainly next week. So
two rushing touchdowns by Brady and three touchdowns through the air. By the way, Matt Castle was 2 of 3 in this game. At one point, I guess Bill Belichick said, "You know what? Maybe we should take him out. Tom Brady seems to be too good for this team." And let's not forget that the New England Patriots also have a pretty decent defense. Mike Vrabel had 3 sacks in that game, and also his 10th touchdown, all receiving.
Yep, 10 catches and 10 touchdowns in his career.
Yeah, it doesn't matter who it is. The New England Patriots find a way to get them the ball, and touchdowns ensue. Now for our final game on Sunday, the New Orleans Saints defeat the San Francisco 49ers 31-10. New Orleans is coming back after having a dreadful start to the season, and Drew Brees looks like the Drew Brees of old, although the running game still is not there with Reggie Bush, admittedly so, but he did run well enough, 10 carries, 64 yards for almost an average of 6.5 yards a carry. I really like New Orleans' passing game, but I don't know if they're going to be able to continue winning games if they keep running the ball this poorly.
This is their third straight victory after starting 0-4, and the key for them was finding Marquise Colston. I mean, he had 8 catches for 85 yards, 3 touchdowns. Brees had a good game, threw for 300. And for the 49ers, only 41 yards rushing for Frank Gore, and that will not produce 49ers victories when he is limited to that.
No, it certainly won't. And I think everyone has officially jumped off. If they hadn't already last week, they officially have jumped off the San Francisco bandwagon. This was one of those teams that experts were saying, oh, they could surprise someone. Well, they're 2-5. They're not going to the playoffs. And I think San Francisco is going to have to wait till next year to even become a contender. And that's not even for the Super Bowl. That's just to become a contender in order to make the playoffs.
Before we get into college football, why don't we? Would you like to give a prediction for tonight's ball game between the Packers and the Denver Broncos in Denver?
In Denver, well, it's going to be cold. Green Bay likes the cold. Brett Favre likes the cold, and Denver at this point just looks lost on defense. And this is a team that usually has a stout defense, and they have leaders, John Lynch being one of them. I like Green Bay because of Brett Favre and his rejuvenation. Although it is going to be tough for them to win this game because they don't have a rushing attack, and the Denver Broncos have arguably the best corner tandem in Dre Bly and Champ Bailey. But I think Green Bay wins this 21-17.
I have Broncos 27-24 on a last-second field goal by Jason Elam.
Okay.
So we will see.
We will see. We certainly will.
We will now shift gears and head to Saturday's action in the college football. In the college football. And one of the best games of the week was actually on Thursday night, which was Boston College, the number 2 ranked team in all the land, against the 8th ranked Hokies of Virginia Tech. Virginia Tech led the game 10-0 for the first 58 minutes of the ball game, and in the last 2 minutes, Heisman candidate Matt Ryan scored 2 touchdowns to help the Boston College Eagles win 14-10. And Brendan, do you think Boston College is for real? Do you think they can stay up here?
Well, finally,
they have some tough games coming up.
Well, finally, a number two team didn't get knocked off after, and you know that would have ruined their season. I really think this is a legit team. Virginia Tech has one of the best defenses, if not the best defense, in college football right now. Matt Ryan looks absolutely incredible, and I really think that Boston College is legit. And if they, it's going to be a shame that they have, you know, all this back scheduling, because, I mean, if they lose one of these games, I think their BCS championship hopes are pretty much dashed. But if they were to run the table, man, I think that this is a legit team right now. And after beating number 8 Virginia Tech, I think that they're going to be very, very tough in these tough games to come.
They have some tough games coming up, starting with next week. Florida State comes into town. And, you know, the jury's out, and we'll see. I still think they're going to lose a game in the regular season, but we'll see. And
all they have left besides Florida State is that they play at Maryland and at Clemson, and then they play Miami at home. So it's going to be a tough four-game stretch, but, I mean, it's definitely winnable for them.
It is.
I think it's there to lose. It's there. It's theirs to lose right now.
They possibly would have to play Virginia Tech again in the AFC Championship game. So, ACC Championship.
ACC Championship. Atlanta Coastal Conference.
Yes, it is.
Yes.
Moving on. We jumped to the number one team. We started with two because they played on Thursday night. But to the number one team that played on Saturday night in what was supposed to be the marquee game of the weekend. Actually was nothing but that. And Ohio State killed Penn State in Happy Valley, 37-17. Penn State falls to 6-3. Ohio State improves to 9-0. Number one team in the land. Brendan, right now, will they play in the national championship this year, Ohio State?
I really think they do. I mean, their biggest question coming into this game was how good is their offense led by Todd Beckman? And I think they just answered that, because Penn State's defense led by Dan Connor is nothing to sneeze at. And they threw all over them and scored 37 points on them. And right now, they have to play Wisconsin, who I think they'll beat. I believe they're going to beat Illinois. But then they have to travel to Michigan at what could be the game of the year.
I'm not sold in Ohio State, and I think they will lose to Michigan in the last week of the season.
But you and agree that will be – do you think that will be the game of the year, is the Michigan Wolverines-Ohio State game?
I guess so. Because of how Michigan started and what it would mean to Ohio State. And it would be the game of the year if Michigan ended up winning that after what a start they had, certainly.
Right.
But, you know, I think it's such a crazy year that let's not just put them in the championship game, because, I mean, we've seen it. Ones and twos going down is nothing new this year, so.
No, it certainly isn't, but, I mean, after this performance in Happy Valley, much less, it was an absolutely dominating performance on the Buckeyes' part.
In a late West Coast game, Arizona State, the fourth-ranked Sun Devils, improved to 8-0, 5-0 in the Pac-10 with a win over Cal.
Not very happy about that. I like Deshaun. I wanted Deshaun Jackson to really succeed.
And Cal's completely falling off the map.
Yeah.
Losing three of the last four games.
5-3, 2-3 in the Pac-10.
Yep. And I don't have a lot of confidence in these top teams. I don't have a lot of confidence in Arizona State, and we'll see later in the year.
What about Kansas?
Well, they're not in the Pac-10.
Oh, they are in the top 10.
And we will get to them. And I don't have any confidence in them either. So.
Oh, you said Pac-10. I thought you said in the top 10.
No, I was saying Pac-10.
My mistake.
Next game, fifth-ranked Oregon beats USC, in which I think a lot of people liked USC in this game. Oregon holds on 24-17, 7-1, and the first three games I talked about, I put down pretty much the team that won. I will actually build up Oregon here. I like Oregon a lot. Oregon and LSU, who had off this week, is my championship game.
Oregon and LSU. Yes, LSU did have a bye week this week. I'm going to have to disagree with you, man. I believe it'll be Ohio State versus LSU in the national championship game. My brother next to me is nodding his head yes in agreement.
Wow. And Knowing your brother, he is very smart when it comes to those.
Yes, he certainly is. He certainly is.
Well, we both agree with LSU, so we'll see.
Okay.
Seventh-ranked West Virginia runs all over Rutgers, the 25th-ranked Scarlet Knights. West Virginia, another one of those teams that had an early season loss, now get the ball moving. They're 7-1, and look to be, well, at least in West Virginia's eyes, hopefully the Big East representative in the BCS, and maybe even more in the national championship game.
Yeah, even though Rutgers did lose this game, Rice, who was an early Heisman favorite, ended up setting the Rutgers rushing record in this and their 31-3 loss to West Virginia.
That is an excellent stat, Brent.
Thank you. I try to make this show great. I really do.
Number 9th ranked Kansas, like you mentioned earlier.
Who by the way, has the fattest coach I have ever seen in my entire life. That guy is humongous. He looks like Pete's the Hut from Spaceballs. That's who he reminds me of.
I'm blanking on his name. I think it's like it's not Mangini. That's the Jets. It's something close to that, though.
Who cares? He's fat. We'll just call him the fat coach. And we'll exactly know who we're talking about.
Kansas and their fat coach win 19-11 over Texas A&M. And they, I think right now, I mean, South Florida was 2, and that was certainly one of the biggest shocks of the year. I think Kansas being in the top 10 is one of the biggest shocks right now.
It certainly is. I mean, we talked about, you know, Appalachian State being Michigan in the beginning of the year, and all these clubs, like freaking soccer, all these schools and colleges who, you know, are perennially, you know, basketball schools like Connecticut, like Missouri, and Kansas, they're all there, and it's freaking wild. I mean, Kansas in the top 10 in football is absolutely crazy.
And the weird thing is, you look at their schedule, they play Nebraska, which is a winnable game because Nebraska sucks this year.
Yes, they do.
At Oklahoma State, another middle-level 5-3 Oklahoma State, that's what they are this year. Iowa State's 1-8, that should be a W. And then last week of the season, against Missouri. Missouri's a good team, 7-1. But, I mean, jeez, if they ran the table and got in, I mean, I think that'd be a shocker to a lot of people.
It certainly would. But if they're to run the table, and, you know, if a couple of these top 10, a couple of these, you know, teams end up losing a game, let's say like Ohio State, or let's say a Boston College, would you be upset to see Kansas in the BCS if they end up running the table and getting maybe the number 1 or number 2 ranking?
Yes, I would, because you look at
even if they beat Missouri, who, let's say, doesn't lose up until that game against Kansas.
Here's the thing. They could definitely, I mean, we mentioned only Missouri's the tough game really on that schedule. Let's say they go 12-0. The only problem Kansas runs into, they have to play the Big 12 championship game, and you know who's going to be the Big 12 South winner?
That's right. Oklahoma. That's right.
So they're going to have to play Oklahoma in the Big 12 championship game. So the possibility of them losing game is actually high, which would be, anybody who supports the BCS would be happy and thankful that they lose.
Yeah, I would be. I definitely would be.
You do not want an undefeated Kansas team throwing a monkey wrench in the BCS.
Yeah, and this is one of those things, and before we move on, I know we want to try to get through these as quick as we can, but do you believe in the BCS, or do you want to see a playoff system?
I want to see a playoff.
Do you?
This is the problem, I think, that the teams are running into. You have a lot of teams. I'll just use Ohio State just because it was the first one I thought of. We've looked at it, Brandon. They didn't play anybody in their non-conference.
No.
And they're finally starting to have some tougher games down later latter part of their schedule. But then you look at teams, let's look at South Florida. They go out, they go to Auburn and beat Auburn in their non-conference schedule. I just think that those four games that teams play non-conference changes the standing so much in BCS that when it comes time to the conference games where you play 8 conference games, there's really not that much turnover if you're getting the job done and staying at 10-1 or no losses on the season.
Right.
And it would be better if you cut the non-conference games down, keep the conference games the same, and have 8 teams at the end of the year play a playoff.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense, because let's think about it this way. That for, I mean, every you know, everything has a playoff system. And to think that college football would suddenly get less exciting with a playoff system is absolutely ludicrous. And it may end up not, you know, a team like a Cinderella may end up making it. And while people may think that's a bad thing, in my eyes, I think that's a great thing. How psyched do people get in college basketball when that happens? And how excited are people to watch the NFL playoffs who have a playoff system? Why can't college football adopt that? I think it would be, I don't think it would be that much different in terms of excitement and the outcomes of games, because I really think that the better team's going to win. And in football, that's largely the case. It's not like basketball. I think there's a lot less chance involved in football, and I really think that if they get a playoff system, I think the best teams will end up getting there, or the better teams will end up getting there in the end.
Excuse me. I completely agree with you. I think it would be better for college football.
You should agree.
Yeah, I'm glad we're on the same page. Moving on, the 10th ranked South Florida Bulls, like we mentioned previously, actually fall to another surprise team, the 23rd ranked.
Yeah, another
UConn Huskies.
Another basketball team.
22-15. South Florida falls to 6-2. UConn improves to 7-1. 3-0 in the Big East. Another shocker of the weekend, Florida, the 11th ranked Gators, fall to 5-3 after such a hyped and high-rated start to a Georgia team that's 6-2 now, controls their destiny in the SEC East, the 18th ranked Georgia Bulldogs, and they won 42-30.
A very, very fun game to watch. Very fun game to watch.
And maybe the 3 losses that Tim Tebow now has, that may hurt his chances now if he wants to win the Heisman.
Yeah, I really think it does. And it's a shame, too, because Tim Tebow did not lose this game for Florida, and it was just one of those games where it was just a shootout, and the Florida defense just could not get Matthew Stafford and that Georgia offense off the field. Marino, 33 carries, 188 yards. You let up that many yards to a running back, that defense is going to get worn down, and that's what happened, and Florida just could not keep up with them.
In other top 25 action, 13th ranked Missouri beat Iowa State 42-28, nothing out of the ordinary there. Missouri improves to 7-1 and moves up to 9th in the BCS standings. Another out of left field thing this year.
Another team this year.
14th ranked Kentucky falls.
Oh.
The 14th and 15th ranked teams fall to underdogs, certainly.
Oh,
Kentucky
my.
Falls to Mississippi State 31-14. And again, like I mentioned with Tebow, I think the same thing's true with Andre Woodson now that Kentucky suffers their third loss of the season.
All my teams are falling on me, man. I like California because of DeSean Jackson, and I love Kentucky because of Andre Woodson.
Me too.
They're all falling down, man. Falling down.
And like I said, Virginia, who is under the radar, falls to 7-2 after not really playing anybody this year.
No, very, very overrated Virginia team.
Yes, they are. They fell. And in a interesting and a good Saturday night game on ESPN, South Carolina in overtime loses to Tennessee, and Tennessee improves to 5-3. South Carolina falls to 6-3, and Spurrier could not get the job done.
Good to see the old ball coach lose.
A couple of other scores of note before we wrap this puppy up: Hawaii, the 17th ranked Rainbow Warriors, I like to call them, win 50-13. Brennan throws for 6 TD passes. I'd like to mention that, just because now that guys like Woodson and Tebow are falling out of the Heisman talk, I mean, I think it's appropriate to throw Colt Brennan at least in the discussion for the numbers he puts up.
In the discussion, but I mean, let's you know, consider who he's throwing against.
Still a long shot, yes.
Yeah, La Tech, Northern Colorado, Central Southern, Idaho, Utah State. I could go on and on. Until they play Boise State, they haven't played a ranked team yet.
The Hook'em Horns of Texas win it.
They lose. Win it. Crap.
Come back and win over Nebraska 28-25. And how about Jamal Charles, the running back for the Texas Longhorns?
How about him?
Career high, 290 yards. How about 216 yards in the fourth quarter? Yeah, man. I tried to whistle. I can't whistle. But yeah, if I could whistle, that's where it would be.
If he did it over four quarters, he would have had over 800 yards rushing.
That is excellent math, Brennan, and I wonder why you are not a mathematician.
I'm majoring in. That's a lie. I'm majoring in English so I don't have to do math.
And the last game of note, the 20th-ranked Michigan, which we actually started our conversation with when we were talking about Ohio State, improves to 7-2, 5-0 in Big Ten. Certainly front runners, maybe not front runners, but 1A and 1B for the Big Ten championship with Ohio State. And it looks like that season will come down to the game against Ohio State in a couple weeks.
Yeah, it'll be a tough game to watch. I really was hoping Penn State will come out this year, but it looks like, you know, as far as sports go in Pennsylvania, there's always next year.
Well, Brennan, that is our college football rundown for this week.
I want to thank you, Jason, for another excellent job of uncovering the college football universe.
Thank you.
No problem, no problem. It is my pleasure. Well, that is all the topics that we have for this week. This was East Coast Biased. We want to thank you guys again for listening to us. As always, please check back into missioncanny.blogspot.com to check out our weekly and actually daily updated blog. And we will get you guys all the news you need to know, and we look forward to seeing you guys on Monday. Hopefully, we will actually have a podcast back-to-back weeks. We haven't done it in a while, and it'll be nice change of pace, wouldn't you say, Jason?
It would be. Yeah. Yes, it would.
If Jason would make the time. It's Jason's
fault.
I'm a
busy man.
You're a busy man. All right, well, thanks again, guys, for listening. This was East Coast Biased, and I am Brennan Canny.
And I am Jason Mish.
And we will see you guys next week. Thanks for listening.